Chapter 2. The world went fuzzy, as if Sabrina were looking at wavy lines on an old television. Just as quickly, her vision cleared, and she found herself outside an old-fashioned-looking restaurant. A neon sign above the door read, "The Golden Egg," and music and laughter could be heard from inside. Her family was nowhere in sight. Sabrina guessed they had gone inside to get out of the blistery cold. Before she could do the same, two chubby men appeared in the doorway. Each had big pink wings like pucks, though the men were much older. One wore a burgundy tracksuit, the other a pinstriped two-piece. They shoved a short, naked man outside, and he tumbled into the snow.
"How many times have we told you, Emperor? No shoes, no shirt, no service," the fairy in the tracksuit growled. "That means pants, too."
"Yeah, this is a respectable establishment,"
the fairy in the pinstriped suit added. He had a face like a bulldog with hanging jowls and big bushy eyebrows.
"I am fully dressed," the Emperor cried. His voice was slurred, and he smelled like liquor. "You are just too stupid to see my clothes."
"The boss has banned you until you learn to obey the dress code,"
the bulldog face grunted. He and his partner turned and went back into the bar, leaving the naked man lying in the snow, where he stayed for a few moments, until finally crawling to his feet and stomping away. Sabrina could still hear him cursing as he disappeared from sight.
"That just scarred me for life," Sabrina said.
Then she pushed the tavern door open and went inside. The Golden Egg was a large, wood-paneled supper club with tables, a long oak bar, and a fireplace. It had tin ceilings and smelled like steak and potatoes. At the tables sat roughly 24 people of all shapes and sizes. An ogre played cards with a centaur. A princess quietly talked with 6 dwarfs, and a couple of men who seemed to be part human and part crow were arguing about politics. More folks were hunkered over tall, frothy mugs at the bar, served by a woman with skin the color of coffee. At the back of the room was an enormous man with yellow eyes playing a grand piano. Sabrina scanned the room and quickly spotted her friends and family standing near the bar. She hurried through the crowd, almost tripping over a hedgehog riding a chicken. Perhaps it was the heat from the fireplace, but the Golden Egg was making Sabrina slightly ill. She felt as if she had walked into the pages of a bedtime story.
Where are we?" she asked when she joined the others.
"You're in the Golden Egg, honey," the bartender said as she washed some glasses. She was a pear-shaped woman with an apron wrapped around her waist and big fluttery eyelashes. Her warm smile helped Sabrina's stomach relax a little. "We don't serve miners, but I suspect I could find a glass of soda pop or two."
"Do you own this place?" Hampstead said over the bar chatter.
"Nope, I just run the place for the boss. People call me Mama. Haven't seen you in here before. You new in town?"
"We're looking for the fairy kingdom," Granny Relda said.
Mama laughed. "You found it, lady. What's left of it anyway?"
"That can't be," Granny Relda said.
Sabrina scanned the room again. The crowd was sparse and mostly drunk. It certainly didn't look like a fairy kingdom.
"Hey!"
a voice said from below. Sabrina glanced down at her feet and nearly screamed in fright. Looking back at her was a walking, talking gingerbread man, no more than 3 inches high.
"Watch where you're stepping, kid!"
Sabrina stared at the little baked good in horror. In the past 3 months, she had talked to a lot of things that weren't supposed to be able to talk back. She was still not used to it, and suspected she never would be. Her bellyache returned with a vengeance.
"What are you looking at?" the gingerbread man said to her. "Didn't anyone tell you it's rude to stare?"
For once, Sabrina fumbled for words.
"She's sorry," Daphne offered. "It's not every day you get to talk to a cookie, you know."
The gingerbread man's brown body suddenly turned red, and his icing face crinkled in anger.
"Hey, cookies are round, Buster. Do I look like I'm round?"
"Sorry," Daphne said. "I didn't mean..."
"That kind of ignorance is why gingerbread people are treated so badly all over the world,"
he said bitterly. "Just 'cause we all came out of the oven doesn't mean we're made from the same dough."
Daphne ducked behind Sabrina. "Relax. She didn't mean to offend you," Sabrina said, finally pulling herself together. As she turned to calm her sister, she felt something hard bounce off her head. She whipped around and found the gingerbread man pulling a gumdrop off his chest. There was one already missing, one she was sure was now lodged in her hair.
"Take that, you bakist," the little man said.
"Did you just throw something at me?" Sabrina cried, quickly regaining her wits.
"Yeah, what are you going to do about it, meat person?" the little baked man taunted.
"Throw another gumdrop at me and you'll see what I'll do, doughboy," Sabrina hissed.
Granny was trying to pull her away when the second gumdrop bounced off of Sabrina's nose.
"That's it," she cried as she turned to the bartender. "Give me the biggest glass of milk you've got."
The gingerbread man kicked Sabrina in the ankle. Despite his size, it hurt, and Sabrina reached down to grab him. The little man darted away and ran through the bar.
"Catch me if you can, stupid meat person," he cried.
"Girls, leave him alone," Granny said.
"He started it," Sabrina said, picking the gummy candy out of her hair.
"Sorry, kid," Mama said from behind the bar. "He looks sweet, but he's really hard to swallow."
The patrons at the bar let out a groan, but Mama giggled at her joke like a little girl.
"I got a million of them," she said.
"We have a sick fairy with us," Mr. Canis said impatiently. "He needs medical attention now. Can you help?"
Mama pointed to the back of the bar.
"Take him that way. The guards will let you in to see the boss."
"Who's the boss?" Hampstead said.
Sabrina glanced to the back of the room where the two guards Mama had referred to were standing. They were enormous.
"You folks really are from out of town," Mama said.
Granny Relda led the family over to the guards, who stood before two double doors. The men were so big they were nearly popping out of their suits. They wore dark sunglasses even though the bar was dimly lit.
"Yeah?"
one of them growled.
"We need to see the boss," Granny Relda said.
"Sorry, lady," the other man said. "No one sees the boss."
"But,"
Granny started to explain.
"Lady, damn's the rules. Now push off."
"Listen," Mr. Hampstead said. "We were told to come here."
The guards looked at each other and then clenched their fists.
"And I'm telling you to leave,"
the first one said as he cracked his knuckles.
"We have a fairy here that needs medical attention," Canis growled.
The guard pulled the blanket away from Puck's head and then frowned.
"Absolutely not," he grunted.
"What?" Sabrina cried. "Why?"
"Puck is Leosta Dub," the second snarled.
"What does that mean?" Daphne asked.
Sabrina shrugged. She usually knew the words Daphne asked about. She'd never heard Leosta Dub before.
"It means he is unwelcome," the first guard snapped.
"If he doesn't get help, he'll die,"
Mr. Canis barked.
"None of my concern. Now move along, geezer," the second guard said, giving Canis a rough shove.
"Pig, take the boy,"
the old man said calmly. Hampstead hurried to his side and took Puck in his arms just as the change came over Canis for the second time that day. Granny Relda stepped over and rested her calming hand on his shoulder.
"Old friend, I'm sure there is another way to..."
Before the old woman could finish, Mr. Canis's body had filled out his suit with rock-hard muscle. He towered over the guards now, yet they didn't seem at all anxious.
"Listen, Grandpa," the second guard said with a yawn. "Your little changing act doesn't impress me none. Move along before things get ugly."
Canis backhanded the man, sending him soaring across the tavern and smashing against a mirror that hung behind the bar. Bottles and glasses crashed down on the guard's head. Suddenly, the music stopped, and all eyes turned to Sabrina and her family and friends.
"Oh, it's already gotten ugly," Canis snarled.
Much to Sabrina's surprise, the remaining guard went through a disturbing transformation of his own. His body doubled in size, and his skin turned a muddy green. He grew pointy ears like a bat, and his lower jaw jutted out past his nose. Two gnarled tusks, like those on a saber-toothed tiger, rose out of his mouth, and his eyes became as red as blood. "Goblins!" Hampstead cried. The guard held a knotty club, which he swung into Mr. Canis's chest, as if he were trying to hit a home run. The blow was like a tiny annoyance to the old man, and he snatched the weapon away, crushing it into splinters in his furry hand. Then he seized the guard around the neck and lifted him off the ground. "The boss will kill you," the first guard cried from behind the bar as he sprang to his feet. He was already changing into a beast as gruesome as his partner.
"I'd like to see him try," Canis said with a wicked laugh. "Do you think he can stand up to the big bad wolf?"
A chill raced up Sabrina's back. Mr. Canis was certainly losing control of his alter ego if he was now referring to himself as the big bad wolf.
"Control yourself ever after," bellowed a voice.
Four fairies appeared from nowhere and surrounded the family. They were much more like Puck in appearance than the two fairies Sabrina had seen at the tavern door. Each had porcelain skin and blonde hair. They all wore jeans, black boots, leather jackets, and ball caps, and would have looked like normal kids if it weren't for their pink wings and the crossbows they leveled at Mr. Canis's head. Each weapon was loaded with a jagged steel-tipped arrow. The leader of the group stepped forward. He had eyes like bright blue diamonds and a head of shaggy hair. His wings fluttered rapidly, as if responding to the tension in the room. He looked no older than Sabrina, but had the confidence of a full-grown man.
"They are trying to get an undesirable in to see the boss,"
the second goblin croaked as he struggled to free himself from Canis's iron grasp.
"Release the guard,"
the fairy said to Mr. Canis. Canis put the goblin down and then did something that made Sabrina shudder. He sniffed the creature and licked his lips.
"I smell your fear, darkling," he said to the guard. "It's delicious."
Granny set a hand on Mr. Canis's shoulder.
"Old friend," she said softly,
and this time it calmed the old man. He shrank to his familiar form, but for a moment he glanced around as if he wasn't sure where he was. He looked down at his left hand with a confused expression. It had not changed back with the rest of his body. It was still covered in thick brown fur. The fairy leader turned to Mr. Hampstead, who held Puck bundled in his arms.
"Let's see this fairy."
Hampstead pulled back the blanket to reveal Puck's fevered face. The leader blanched, then gingerly took the weak boy into his own arms, cradling him gently.
"He's wounded badly," Granny Relda said. "We hoped your people might be able to help."
"Follow me,"
the boy fairy said as his wings vanished.
"But Mustard Seed,"
one of the guards cried.
"Your father."
Mustard Seed turned a hard stare on the goblin.
"My father will not hear of this, will he?"
The goblin's eyes were now alight with fear.
"Of course not," he stammered.
The boy fairy nodded, turned, and strode through the double doors. The group hurried to follow. He led them down a long, narrow hallway lined with doors. At the far end was a pair marked Employees Only. The fairy shouldered them aside and gestured for the family to follow. They found themselves in a large room with hardwood floors. A roaring fireplace crackled on one side, and a large oak desk sat on the other. A few high-backed chairs were scattered about. In one of them sat a woman wearing a leopard print dress, big golden hoop earrings, and matching shoes. Sabrina guessed she was in her early 40s, and despite her gaudy outfit, she seemed very dignified. She had long brown hair, professionally styled, and the same shocking blue eyes as Mustard Seed. A pretty young girl around Sabrina's age stood behind her, gently combing the woman's hair. The girl's eyebrows were arched upward in what appeared to be a permanent look of doubt and suspicion, and she was wearing an odd little pastel dress that seemed to be made out of silks and spiderwebs.
"Mustard Seed, if you are looking for your father, he is not here,"
the woman said.
Thank the heavens for miracles, the boy said as he set Puck on the nearest sofa. Puck has returned. The woman and the young girl cried out in unison, rose to their feet and rushed to Puck's side. They knelt down and brushed his matted hair off his sweaty face.
Son, the woman cried.
Sabrina was stunned. She'd assumed that Puck had a mother, nearly everyone did, but she had pictured her as old and broken, physically and mentally exhausted by Puck's pranks and immaturity. This woman was young and healthy and seemed to be perfectly sane.
Moth, find Cobweb, quickly, the woman said to the girl. Tell him to bring his medicines.
But
go,
Puck's mother shouted. Moth cringed and raced from the room as the woman turned her attention back to Mustard Seed.
Where did you find your brother?
You're his brother? Sabrina said. But you're so clean. Puck was usually covered in food, and whatever he had found in the forest to roll around in.
Puck has to be adopted, Sabrina thought to herself.
They brought him, Mustard Seed said to his mother, gesturing to the Grimms.
What did you do to my boy?
Puck's mother studied the group for the first time, her face full of suspicion.
He was fighting a Jabberwocky, and it ripped off his wings, Sabrina explained, feeling a lump of guilt lodge in her throat.
He'd been trying to protect her. The woman eyed her coldly.
And where would my son encounter a Jabberwocky?
Ferryport Landing, Daphne replied. He lives there with us.
The woman scowled.
So that's where he went.
Ma'am, my name is Relda Grimm. I've been looking after Puck for some time now. These are my...
Grimm? More troublemakers?
The woman bellowed, cutting Granny Relda off. Sabrina sighed. Everywhere the family went, they got an angry reception from ever-afters. Was this just old hatred of Wilhelm? Or had her father, Henry, been meddling in ever-after business? Sabrina's heart sank. Had her father been secretly doing the detective work he'd left Ferryport Landing to avoid?
You must know our father, Henry, Sabrina said, testing her theory.
Your father?
No, I'm talking about Veronica Grimm, Puck's mother said.
Veronica? The Grimms cried in unison.
You know our mom?
Daphne said. The woman fell back as if she'd been slapped.
Veronica Grimm had children?
At that moment, the little fairy girl known as Moth returned to the room.
Your Majesty, Cobweb is on his way.
Very good. Mustard Seed, escort these people to the street, his mother snapped. Their presence is no longer required.
Whoa, 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 Mr. Hampstead said. Let's all calm down. Now, we all want what is best for Puck, so
you can leave on your feet or in a box, the woman threatened.
Mr. Canis stepped forward, eyes flashing. He started to open his mouth, but was quickly interrupted by an angry voice.
If anyone is leaving in a box, it will be you.
Sabrina spun around and found three large men standing behind her. Their leader was a tall, bearish fairy, roughly the same age as Puck's mother. He had a big, thick face and thinning hair. He was wearing a black pinstriped suit, expensive shoes, and a gold watch. His wings were fluttering furiously. The other two men were the ones Sabrina had seen when she had first entered the Golden Egg, the track-suited bouncer and his bulldog-faced partner. They were carrying violin cases. Their leader charged at Puck's mother, grabbing her roughly by the wrists and shaking her violently.
You've pushed me too far, Titania.
Get your hands off me, Oberon!
The woman roared, pulling her hands away.
Get this traitor out of here!
Oberon cried, pointing at Puck. His two huge cohorts moved toward the sick boy.
He's hurt, Mustard Seed said, as he stepped in their path to protect his brother.
Oberon turned his anger on his son.
Would you like to join your brother in banishment? Do you want to be Leosta Dub as well?
Mustard Seed shook his head. Still, he stood his ground.
Puck is your son, and he's hurt, Oberon, Titania pleaded.
He's no son of mine,
the king snarled, standing over Puck's weak body with clenched fists. He betrayed me. He turned his back on thousands of years of tradition. In the old lands, the king of faery would have had his head on a pike for such disobedience.
What's a pike? Daphne whispered to her sister. A long, pointy stick, Sabrina replied quietly.
Daphne curled her lip.
Just like your traditions, the old lands are dead and gone, Titania said.
Bah! Oberon cried. Not for long.
Just then, a tall, thin man with long black hair and a dark face entered the room. His eyes were sunken and purple. He carried a black case in one frail hand.
You called for me? He said. Cobweb, I'm afraid you've wasted a trip. We won't be needing any medicine today, Oberon said, dismissing the fairy with a flick of his hand.
Sabrina was stunned. Would he really let Puck die?
No, wait!
Titania cried. She pulled her husband aside, and her voice suddenly softened.
Let Cobweb heal Puck, and I will give you a present.
What could you give me that I would ever want, Titania?
Power, Oberon, Titania said. I can give you power over the entire community.
I already control them, the fairy leader said with a laugh. His goons giggled with him.
Perhaps, but you don't command their respect. I can give you something you've always wanted, their support.
Titania argued.
I can give you something that will help you rebuild your precious fairy kingdom.
And what would that be? Oberon said.
Titania gestured to Sabrina and Daphne.
The children of Veronica Grimm.
Oberon looked stunned for a moment, then laughed.
Another one of your lies.
Titania grabbed Sabrina roughly by the wrist.
Tell him who your mother was, human.
Veronica Grimm, Sabrina said, yanking her hand away. But I think you've got the wrong Veronica Grimm. She wasn't involved in any ever-after nonsense.
Oberon's eyes flashed so brightly, Sabrina had to look away. Then he turned to Cobweb.
Heal the boy!
Oberon turned back to his wife. But when he is well, he can go back to whatever rock he has been living under for the last 10 years. Mustard Seed and Moth looked saddened by Oberon's declaration, but Titania nodded and thanked him. Oberon spoke to the fairy in the tracksuit.
Bobby Screwball, I need the wizard.
Bobby Screwball nodded, reached into his violin case, and took out a long, thin stick with a big silver star on the end. He waved it in circles above his head, and with a flick of his wrist, a man suddenly appeared from nowhere. He was short and paunchy, with thinning hair and a big, bulbous nose. He wore gray trousers, a white shirt, and an emerald-green apron covered in oil and dirt. He seemed completely bewildered, his eyes darting around the room in panic. Then he frowned.
"Aw, jeez, Your Majesty!"
the man cried in a thick southern accent.
I was in a staff meeting. An entire group of trainee elves and Santa Clauses just saw me disappear into thin air. They're probably all freaked out. You may think that forgetful dust grows on trees, but you're wrong. It's very expensive and harder to get.
Wizard, I need your particular talents, Oberon said.
Tonight we're having a celebration.
I want to see every ever-after in town. Tell them I have a special surprise for them.
You're kidding me, right? A party? Tonight?
The wizard cried.
Impossible. I can't just walk over and have the signal turned on. These things have to be planned.
The fairy with the bulldog face stepped over to the wizard, grabbed him by the shirt collar, and pulled him close.
You're the wizard. Nothing is impossible. Call off your goon,
the little man cried.
Let him go, Tony Fats,
Oberon said. The fairy frowned but released the squirming man.
Fine, but don't expect a miracle,
the wizard grumbled.
That's what I like to hear, the king said.
He turned to his men and gestured at Sabrina and her family.
Keep them somewhere safe. We don't want the community's Christmas present damaged before they get it.
Will do, boss, Bobby Screwball said as Oberon marched out of the room.
I will need a little privacy with Puck, Cobweb said as he opened his case.
He removed several vials containing powders, a few empty glass jars, a mortar and pestle. Then he began mixing things in the mortar.
Everyone out, Titania said as she exited the room.
Moth and Mustard Seed followed close behind, leaving the Grimms and their friends to trail reluctantly after the odd, fidgety wizard and Oberon's henchmen. The wizard took out a silver box that looked like a remote control. He pushed some of the buttons quickly, and when an odd wheeze came out of it, he shook it angrily. Then he pushed some more and shoved it into his pocket. When he looked up, he acted as if he was noticing the group for the first time.
Who are you people?
Bobby and Tony Fats led the family out into the hallway. Sabrina felt Daphne slip her hand into her own and squeeze tight.
Don't worry,
Sabrina whispered to the little girl, wishing she could take her own advice. She had no idea what Oberon's henchmen were capable of. Both Tony Fats and Bobby Screwball had hands as big as pumpkins. They also looked and talked as if they had seen too many mobster movies.
The boss wants you to wait in here, Bobby Screwball said when he stopped at one of the many doors in the hallway.
He opened it and shoved everyone roughly inside. The room was full of boxes and extra tables and chairs that matched the furnishings in the main room. The two men were preparing to leave when Sabrina spun around on them.
Wait a minute, she cried. You can't lock us up.
We can't, Tony Fats said to his friend. I thought we just did.
They both laughed.
No, you can't, Mr. Canis growled as he stalked toward them.
Tony and Bobby opened their violin cases and took out their magic wands. They waved them threateningly, and Mr. Canis took a step back.
You're not very nice, Daphne said. What kind of ever-afters are you?
We're fairy godfathers,
Tony Fats said.
I've never heard of fairy godfathers.
And that's just how we like it, Bobby Screwball replied. Now, you sit in here and keep your mouths shut, and no one will get hurt.
Bobby slammed the door. Sabrina rushed over and pressed her ear against it. She heard the lock turn and the men's muffled conversation. Daphne joined her, and together the two girls strained to listen.
Veronica was a real looker, Bobby said. She had great gams, too,
Tony added.
What does gams mean?
Daphne asked.
They liked her legs, Sabrina replied.
The men's voices faded away.
This can't be good, Hampstead said.
Relda, I could easily overpower them, Mr. Canis said.
And we may need you to do just that, old friend, Granny said. But they do have Puck, and he is not well. I believe it would be wise to just wait and see what happens. I don't believe we are in any danger.
Not in any danger, Sabrina cried.
Oberon says he's giving us away to the Everafters. I think we should find Puck and break out of here now.
I think we should stay. They seem to know Mom, Daphne said. Wouldn't it be cool if she was a fairy tale detective, too?
Don't be so gullible, Sabrina said.
I'm not being gullible, the little girl cried.
What does gullible mean?
It means you believe what anyone tells you. They couldn't have known Mom. Remember, this is Puck's family. The Trickster King, this is all some big joke of theirs.
I'm not so sure, Granny said. Your mother was a Grimm, after all.
By marriage, Sabrina said, a little louder than she meant to. My mom was the only normal person in this family. She would never have gotten involved with Everafters.
Your mother knew about Everafters. She lived in Fairyport Landing with your dad when you were just born, Granny said.
She's right, Sabrina, Hampstead said. Your mother and Henry got into a number of adventures in the short time she lived with us.
Adventures? Mr. Canis grumbled. More like near-death experiences.
I think that's why she fit into the family so nicely,
Granny Relda said with a smile. Veronica seemed to have a healthy dose of the grim women's spunk.
Stop it, stop it, stop it! Sabrina cried.
She felt she had to defend her mother. Nobody knew Veronica better than she did. The thought that she would have chosen to get involved in the family business when she didn't have to was ridiculous. Her mother was a normal, everyday, predictable person who enjoyed reading, museums, and her children. She was exactly what Sabrina wanted to be when she grew up.
Well, you don't have to be a jerkazoid about it, Daphne snapped.
Jerkazoid? Mr. Hampstead asked. Sabrina's little sister was always coming up with unusual words that made sense only to her.
It's my new word. It means her jerkiness isn't normal. It's superpowered.
Sabrina ignored the little girl's insult and turned to her grandmother.
We should leave now, she pleaded.
Granny shook her head. Sabrina wanted to argue, but she could see it was pointless. When the old woman made up her mind, there was no use trying to change it. The family waited for over an hour in near silence. After some time, Bobby Screwball and Tony Fats brought them a supper of antipasti, salad, stuffed shells, and lemon chicken. It looked and smelled delicious, and Sabrina was starving, but she refused to take a bite, warning that it was probably poisoned. Mr. Canis sniffed it and assured her that there was nothing unusual about the food, but she still wouldn't eat. Sometime later, the door opened and the wizard entered. He stepped into the room, wearing the same outfit as earlier, but he was quite a bit more frazzled. He looked as if he had spent the past hour pulling out what little hair he had left on his head.
"I'm very sorry about this, folks," the wizard said.
Mr. Canis sprang on the little man, knocking him to the ground. Fangs dipped out of his mouth and hovered dangerously close to the wizard's neck.
"We have questions," Canis growled, "and we're tired of waiting for answers."
"I don't know anything," the wizard cried. "I swear, Oberon sent me to retrieve you. The party is about to start."
Mr. Canis turned to Granny Relda, who nodded.
"Let him up."
Canis allowed the man to get to his feet. The wizard brushed himself off, checked his neck for puncture wounds, then said,
"Listen, I'm sorry this is happening, but I'm just the messenger."
"And who exactly are you?"
Hampstead asked.
"My name is Oscar Zoroaster Friedrich Isaac Norman Henkel Emmanuel Ambroise Diggs."
He reached into his pocket, took out his silver remote, pushed a button, and waited as a business card spit out from a slot in the front. He handed it to Granny Relda.
"The Oscar Zoroaster Friedrich Isaac Norman Henkel Emmanuel Ambroise Diggs?"
she said.
"The one and only," the man said.
"Are you an ever after?"
Daphne asked.
"Yes, ma'am. My friends have been known to call me Oz."
Daphne let out a squeal that sounded like a scream and a snort at the same time. She jumped around in a crazy jig. When she was finished, she stood shaking and giggling with the palm of her hand firmly planted between her upper and lower teeth. After a minute, she removed her hand, cried,
"You're my favorite!"
and launched herself at the stunned man. She wrapped her arms around him, and he tightened up as if the little girl were trying to kill him rather than give him a hug.
"Favorite what?"
Oz asked.
"Favorite everything!"
"Well, it's always nice to meet a fan,"
he replied, struggling to free himself. "Don't be too flattered," Sabrina mumbled. She does the same thing when the pizza delivery guy shows up at the door. Granny pulled the little girl away with considerable effort.
"I assume you all are from Fairyport Landing. We don't get to meet too many of our neighbors from the north,"
Oz said, quickly turning to Sabrina.
"And I know you. You're Sabrina. I haven't seen you in years. Your mother used to bring you by the store all the time. I remember once we put you on Santa's lap to get a picture, and you wet your pants. Santa was furious. Oh, your mother was so embarrassed, but I found it very funny."
"Liar," Sabrina thought, blushing.
She was tired of the game the ever-afters were playing with her.
"My mother never worked in a store."
Oh, no. I work in a store. Macy's Department Store, actually. Your mother and I were great friends. She visited me there often.
Oz turned to Daphne.
And you must be Daphne. I held you when you were no bigger than a snow pea. You both look so much like her. You are going to break a lot of hearts when you are older.
Daphne looked as if she was going to hug the wizard again.
Are we prisoners?
Granny Relda asked, gesturing toward the door. Oz frowned.
The king would probably call you guests. Guests who aren't allowed to leave this room,
Hampstead said.
Why?
I'm afraid I'm in the dark as well, Oz said. Unfortunately, I'm the guy they call when they want something organized. They rarely tell me what it's for, but I promise that all of our questions will be answered soon. Right now, everyone is waiting for you.
He led the reluctant family down the hallway and back into the restaurant. Every seat was taken. It was one of the most unusual groups of people Sabrina had ever seen. There were pirates, dwarfs, goblins, talking animals, even an enormous man-sized bug wearing glasses. A sultry blonde singer whose act brought catcalls and laughter from the audience had joined the yellow-eyed piano player. She wore a shimmering sequined dress and long white gloves and prowled around the room flirting with the male patrons. She flashed each a warm smile.
She's beautiful,
Hampstead said as he stared at the woman, dazzled.
And off limits, if you know what's good for you, Oz said. Her name is Bess. She's Tony Fats's girlfriend.
Just then, Oberon and Titania entered the room. Mustard Seed, Cobweb, Moth, and the group of leather-jacketed fairies the family had met earlier followed in behind them. Their arrival brought forth a chorus of boos and jeers from the crowd, forcing the singer and the piano player to stop their lively performance.
"You've made us wait, Oberon,"
an ogre shouted from his seat.
"I've shared the same air with a hoon for too long."
A horse at the back of the room booed the ogre and spit at him.
"Why have you brought us here?"
a chicken squawked from her seat.
"I came all the way from Harlem."
"Friends, I have a present for you,"
Oberon shouted as he moved through the crowd.
"Christmas time comes to the ever afters."
The group exploded with anger. Many rose to their feet, shouting angry words about dirty fairy tricks and not being fooled again. Oberon seemed unconcerned and just flashed the girls a grin. He rushed over to them, grabbed each roughly by the arm, and dragged them onto the stage at the back of the room.
"What's the big idea?"
Sabrina said, trying to pull away from his powerful grip. Oberon ignored her and turned to the crowd.
"Silence!"
he shouted. "Don't you want your present?" Everyone sat back down.
"Yahoo, no want present from fairy,"
yelled an incredibly hairy man.
"Is that so? You don't want the children of Veronica Grimm?"
Oberon cried. The crowd instantly hushed. They sat motionless, watchful and suspicious. Sabrina looked over at her sister, and her heart began to race.
"I knew it," she thought. "They hate us here just like they do back in Fairyport Landing. They're going to kill us."